Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers Radio on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6:08, 85 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, 1-866-514-1600. I'm Jordan Klein. He's Nick Queen, fighting with his headphones. She is the lovely Lola Miller, trying to keep us on the air.
Our guest is on the phone.
All right. And Sam's with us, too. I promised I wouldn't make her talk, but she might. Anyway. Nikki, you want to introduce our guest?
I have headphones. They were tangled all the way around the leg over here.
Real quick, before we get to the guest, I want to mention Lola. Lola's got to quit smoking now because I got 8 o'clock in the morning with my chiropractor.
But you have not gone yet.
Okay, at 8 o'clock in the morning, or 8:30, you're going to get a call from me. And Lola's going to be
Lola,
puffing.
Require a doctor's note.
I have to bring a note from the doctor.
I know Doc, so I can always check.
She'll be calling behind you.
I can always check.
Now you really have to go.
Also, August 6th, the Capitol Music Hall here in downtown Wheeling, West Finley CD release party. I'd like to see everybody there. 7 o'clock. Get out there. Please. Nikki, you want to introduce
You'll be the guy in the bongos, right?
I will be playing up on stage. I'm so excited. I hope people come.
So bring glasses so you don't have to look
okay,
directly.
Okay, our guest is calling from a very long distance.
Yes, I know
that. Think it's time we get him on.
All right, well, Nigel Kerner is the author of two books, Gray Aliens and The Harvesting of Souls, and The Song of the Grays. A new book exposes the agenda behind the biorobotic gray aliens' genetic manipulation of certain human races. Nigel, are you with us?
Hi there, this is Nigel from England. Greetings to all of you in America and around the world.
Hi, Nigel.
Hi there, mate. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
And thank you very much. I'm great.
What's the weather like there?
Hot.
Absolutely gorgeous. It's about 88 degrees under blue, sunny skies. And the sun is just now starting to go down because it's about almost 6:30 here. So absolutely gorgeous. What's your weather like?
Well, it's very difficult to notice because it's rather dark outside.
Oh, that's right. It's nighttime. I'm sorry.
But we don't have any rain.
Well, that's no good. Rain. That's good.
That's always a plus.
Now, where exactly are you calling us from in England?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to greet someone over there. Who am I speaking to? Jordan? Lola?
Oh, that was Nick just asked.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Nick. This is Nigel here. I've got with me a couple of guys, too. One's a associate professor of cell biology at Tennessee University, one of your local universities there.
Uh-huh.
And we've got Dr. Andrew Silverman, a very long-standing friend of mine who is a medical doctor. And I hope he's got some interesting things to say for you guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, John and Andrew. How are you guys doing?
Hi, great to be here.
Hi, nice to see you.
Okay, so now which one, let me make sure I try to get all the voices correct. Which one is Dr. Silverman?
That's me. I'm Andrew. Hi.
Hello. And the other, John Biggerstaff?
Hi, that's me.
Okay. All right, I can keep those straight, I think. But if not, I apologize. Now, to get started, you know, Nigel, you know, I was looking through, you know, the books, the reviews, what people have written about them. You know, you're looking at Grays as, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, as almost a kind of a star seed to the Earth. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that.
That they kind of like brought our, you know, started humans on the Earth, the Grays. Would that be correct?
Well, I think they're a strange phenomenon, something that I don't think that our local earthly population has ever encountered. I think they're a kind of roboid, a kind of half-biological, mechanical entity that has no situational living aegis, so to speak.
Okay.
You know, they don't live like we do in the sense that biological life lives, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Now,
it's a universal paradigm that I'm sure is common all over the universe.
And would you say that, you know, another race or, you know, a group of aliens created them to kind of, you know, go out on their behalf to other worlds?
Yeah, you see, don't you think that we're doing that now? We seem to be doing that now with robots.
Oh, yeah, that, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and so perhaps, and you know, our technology is just, what, maybe 200 years old when it comes to serious technology.
Mm-hmm.
These guys might be there many thousands of years, and who knows what can develop in a concatenate line going forward. And so it's a fascinating and for me a very, very challenging topic. To actually try and get to the bottom of what these greys might actually be. And we're just investigating it. And there are certain ideas that run through one's head when one considers all the evidence that seems to present itself from time to time, you know, of their presence here on our planet.
Well, and then,
of which I'm thoroughly convinced, you know, they do actually, there's no argument in my mind, at least, that they are present here we have to try and find out and understand what on earth this means for all of us, every single one of us on the planet in human fellowship, if perhaps we are to survive.
Now, Nigel, this is Jordan. I got a kind of a question. Your outlook on what the greys are, you know, it's so different than what most people say. Like, really, where did you come up with it? Like, or sorry, I don't want to say where did you come up with it, but how did you get to this, I guess, understanding.
Well, I've done a lot of research, you know, on this particular subject. And before I went public with it, I had to make sure that, you know, obviously the thing kind of hitched up and there were no anomalies in it that could be could lead one astray and so forth. I'm perfectly convinced that from the vast amount of evidence, and anyone who actually has looked into the subject, I'm sure will be convinced. Uh-huh. That something really strange is going on here. And of course, it's related to what is commonly known as the UFO phenomenon. And, you know, it's not something that I've kind of lightly speculated on. It's something that we've thought about a great deal and looked at from every angle we possibly can to come and arrive at some coherent thesis as to what this phenomenon might actually be, and what we in our own terms, our own life living terms as human beings might actually, you know, come to know them in their own kind of ways of existence and so on.
Now, the gentleman you have with you, and I would think that probably John Biggerstaff, who's an associate professor of biochemistry. Now, does he lend into kind of your ideas on this being a like a biomechanical
entity?
Yeah, I was trying to think of the best word. I didn't want to say race, but how does he, you know, how does that tie into, you know, in biochemistry?
Well, in biochemical terms, I mean, what's happening in science at the moment is that we are. We're moving headlong to replace our organs and senses with machinery all the time. So in many ways, we're tracking our biochemistry to become more like what these aliens may have already become, so that we may, in fact, be making our own sort of alien race in the future by imbuing intelligence, or what we call intelligence, to machinery.
Yeah, and okay, and so let me try to. I'm trying to put my head around it because, you know, a lot of times I'm a big science fiction person, you know, and I've read stories before where, you know, races would create, you know, living entities with, you know, almost engineering them to some extent, and then almost transferring their
personality,
soul, whatever you'd want to call it, into, you know, into that. Device or entity or whatever you want to call it, to continue their life. Is that different than what's happening here?
I think that's absolutely very different. I think what Nigel addresses in his book as the definition of what a soul or consciousness is,
uh-huh.
is a very special thing that we have, which these artificial intelligences don't.
Okay.
And as Nigel continues to talk about this, we'll see much more about that.
All right, well, now... Nigel, what exactly, you know, would you call a soul? I mean, I know the first, your newest book is called Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, you know, and which is kind of, you know, if you sit back and think about just a title, actually it's kind of scary.
Well, more than that, Nick, like, okay, most people see, like, the Grays, like, I've heard a lot, like, not only is it, like, about, like, sexual stuff, but most of it's, like, a positive effect, you know? It's a good outlook to be abducted by the Grays, you know? They're helping you in some kind.
And there's
if they're harvesting your soul, that doesn't seem to be very helpful.
Yeah, well, the point is, you know, we've got to look at this as neutrally as possible. We can't assume that anything strange is evil and wicked and whatever. But we have some very powerful suggestive factors that might give us a more accurate answer on this. Who am I talking to, Nick or Jordan? Can I say?
This is Jordan.
Hi, Jordan. Well, the point is.
Howdy.
The point is these things that are, and it, as I say, it's to do with the UFO phenomenon, and that phenomenon has shown up over the years to be something that is very covert and doesn't want to be known, want to be found out or whatever. Now, this is an underlying theme of that entire phenomenon. There's a very, very strong behest to remain hidden and covert. Now, if there is such a thing as some kind of alien entity, be a roboid or not, we think it's a roboid because of the inertial gravitational factors that would have to be contended with if you travel past the speed of light as they seem to be doing,
mm-hmm.
Even breaking down that barrier. Now, can you imagine coming into a planet, for instance, Jordan, at that uh-huh. stupendous speed, past the speed of light, you have to decelerate. And if you decelerate with that kind of order of magnitude, if we tried it with our bodies, we would be a stain on the window of the spaceship, you know.
Yeah.
But these guys seem to manage this, and they do this because I believe they are made out of from all the research I've been through, and the Russians have done some work on this and so on. And it seems that they're a kind of mercury mesh with gold wires intertwined. There's a very strange mechanistic kind of being, which has the magnitudes of intelligence, as John was trying to say. And these beings are made for space travel, basically. And of course, that would fit in with the kinds of things we do by sending probes out, you know, which are mechanical things and so forth. But theirs is of a very, very high order of sophistication. And of course, they've come here and they don't want their presence announced. And we want to know why they're covert, what might be the reason for that covert stance they're taking. Because if there was something beneficent and mm-hmm. something good, you would expect them to show themselves and say, now, look, guys, we're here, your technology is primitive, but we've got some wonderful stuff we're going to show you, from tricks of the trade and so forth, to bring your planet up to the highest orders of intelligent magnitude and so on. They don't do that.
Yeah.
These things are always hidden. They always have some kind of behest which is around the corner, so to speak. And that's a rather suspicious stance. Now, looking at that, it seems to me that we ought to ask questions about why this is so. And I do suspect that they have a hidden agenda. And this is why they really don't come up clean. And can I bring Dr. Silverman in? He's got
sure.
some ideas on this.
Yeah, sure.
Well, hello, Dr. Silverman.
Hi. Sorry, who am I talking to?
This is Nick.
Nick. We're all in here. You're talking
to
all of us.
Yeah, you're talking to all of us.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, when people sort of think about the interaction between humans and aliens, they wonder, you know, why don't they just appear in front of the White House or grand scales like that and declare themselves? Because people assume that they're going to see us as equals. It seems to me that, you know, from looking at what's been happening in lots of people's research, and particularly looking at Nigel's work, it's far more like a comparison would be how scientists study an ant colony, or how the naturalists study creatures by putting little implants on them, you know, ringing the birds and uh-huh. seeing where they go. And they're just studying us from afar. They've got no need to actually declare themselves to us, because we're just part of their experiment, if that's the case.
So we're really just like guinea pigs for them, you know, like a frog.
Yeah, the problem here, you see, is what every superior stance has always dominated the inferior stance to the detriment of the inferior stance. I mean, when I have to say that the Native Americans didn't do too well when Columbus first landed as a result of that landing. So you if you see what I'm trying to say. So
sure.
This is a very, very strong point I have to make, that anything that dominates usually dominates the detriment of that which it dominates.
Well, and we spoke to people before that have said, well, you know, they're here to observe us, they're here to, you know, and it almost as a neutral, yeah. You know, and it's not neutral when you abduct, it's not neutral when you experiment, you know, there's something going on, you know.
You said it.
Yeah, and it's,
absolutely.
They're not just being passive in their stance.
Yeah, so we have cause to be concerned, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And with that caution, and looking at it from the point of view of this covert stance they take, I came to certain conclusions about it. And no one can obviously be right, Nick, but I mean, I'm trying to put the kind of slight on this I can. And whichever way I look at it, I've come to the conclusion there's no doubt that something is wrong in the state of Denmark, so to speak, here. and if you pardon that expression. But
no, I like that. You're from England. That's cool.
The abductee, there's this phenomenon they call abduction, and I don't know whether you are familiar with it, but this is where people who claim to have been taken up into these vehicles or whatever, the ships that these things come in, abductees have commented on the blank kind of emotional faces of the Greys as they carry out painful procedures on their human subjects, many of which are centered on the reproductive system. The impression is that we are a kind of, as you said, a laboratory rat to them.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that's pretty worrying, really. And I think that somehow the truth of all of this ought to be revealed. And whoever's keeping this all hidden, they really are the real villains, I think, of the piece. And we've got to try and seek out these rascals and show them for what they are, because all of us in humanity might be in this particular paradigm theirs, you know, this particular behest that these things might be on. And, you know, I just quite simply, as a dad, as a father, fear for my children. And you know, I think that's a legitimate fear, don't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my first question then, you know, let's say we, you know, accept that you know, what you're saying is correct. And, you know, and there are certain, I guess, you know, standards. Whenever you talk about this, that, you know, people always bring up, and you already talked about one of them, is that they do kind of have this almost detached, you know, even when they speak to, you know, the abduction, those that they abduct, you know, they're very much, they present no emotion one way or the other. They're very
indifferent
to what's happening. You know, don't be worried, you know, everything will be okay. But even then, you know, it's not like, you know, caring. It's more, I guess, programmed, you know, if we're going to go with what you're saying. But they also seem to, you know, abduct certain, it's not like they're going after random people. There seems to almost have a pattern. You know, they're going after, you know, we've spoken to several people, Manuel Navarrete, you know, being one of them, where, you know, he's been abducted. I think he said his father's been abducted. Now his son's being abducted.
If, as Nigel says, these are biological roboids, then we shouldn't really be surprised that they don't display emotion, because they're actually not capable of feeling. Yeah. Feeling stands testament to something that goes beyond the physical, and I think this is something that is going to be spoken about later.
Okay.
That it's actually something that attests to the existence of a complete other type of universe that isn't made up of dead big stars and galaxies.
Yeah. You see, if I may just say, just cut in there a moment, the fact that they take selected types of people, or certain types of people, or certain lines and families and so on, I've got a different take on that. I don't think these people ought to be too concerned, although I have the greatest and deepest sympathy for them in the terrible experiences that some of them go through. But I think that these people have something special about them, that these individuals, these greys or whatever they're called, these aliens, alien robots might be, I think they're trying to establish biological lines of interception. They're trying to make sure that whatever they might do to us, what their hidden agenda might entail, has to do with reproduction. They may well be trying to amalgamate in some kind of way with our own species. And that is the problem. That is the big thing that I've written about. And that is, I come to the conclusion that that is really impossible to do because we are factorized in having something wondrous that is, we came in with the beginning of the universe. We are natural. We come down in a kind of, you know, descent, and we can trace ourselves back right to the very beginning when the whole thing happened. These things may be manufactured machines. And of course, when they see that we can reproduce, and that's of course another consequence of the natural process of coming through, you know, in this line. And that's incidentally what I would identify as a soul. Simply the line of descent that comes from the beginning of the universe that every single human being can establish to be unique and their own. And that, you see, is what I think is so wonderful about humanity, is we have this facility. And of course, when these robots come across a planet with such a type of paradigm, they are fascinated by this, and they're trying, therefore, to see how best, by investigating these lines of descent, which ones would be suitable, maybe, for something they have in mind. And that's another worrying thing, you know. If this is Nick, I address that to you, okay?
Okay. Well, go ahead, Jordan, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, you know, you're talking about, you know, what they might have in mind. Do you think that they're... I mean, I doubt it's going to be like world domination, you know, we're really nothing to them. But who do you think is behind what they're doing? I mean, I know Nick, you know, mentioned before, you know, are all the aliens kind of programming these things to go and scout out, I guess? Or, you know, is there a certain breed, I guess, a species of alien?
Well, like, is there a certain manufacturer that put these into place, I guess, is what he's... trying to get at, you know, who's...
Is it the reptilians that are really trying to give it to us? Yeah. Or, you know, how is this happening?
Actually, I really don't. And I don't think anyone can actually pinpoint where their particular ancestry hails from in the universe, or whether they're part of some reptilian kind of intelligence that has developed these particular roboids as a investigative tool on their behalf. And it's interesting. I mean, I have some ideas which I put in my book on this, but it would be an extremely long thesis, Nick Jordan, to actually go into that. But it really, in a sense, is not relevant. The fact is, we've got this particular thing to cope with. And if this is real, as I believe it is, I think the most important thing is that our own human individuals who are in charge of the situation in governments all over the world with the power to hide what these things might be doing. These are the villains of the piece as far as I'm concerned. They're the ones that we all ought to be concerned about. Why are they hiding this phenomenon where, you know, even astronauts concede that they've actually seen these things? I mean, you know, your own Ed Mitchell is on record as saying that he's seen these things and knows they're here and so on.
Or do you think fear of...
Can you imagine what a sensational thing this is, Jordan? The fact that there is something here, and here we've got this fraud of SETI looking out there saying we're trying to get a radio signal and all the rest of it. Well, some huge subterfuge seems to be working here, and I hope... And that doesn't sound paranoid, but if I'm right, we can't be paranoid enough, don't you think?
Well, I know I was, because I always pull stories off just in case something happens. You know, if we're not able to get in contact with somebody. And actually, one of the stories I picked today, and it kind of ties into this, is, you know, it's from the Mail Online, which is the Daily Mail over in England. It says, is ET using Twitter? You know, and a scientist talking about how, you know, most likely aliens have been sending us messages, you know, short messages, trying to get in contact with us, and we've just been missing them. And you're saying, no, they're not trying to send us messages, they're here. You know, and you almost get to the point where if they do know that we're here, why are they, you know, not telling us? Do you think it's maybe a fear of how we would react, or do you think it's, you know, if you control the information, you control the situation, kind of thing?
Well, you see, the point is, I see that's what makes it so suspicious. The fact is, if they were beneficent and they wanted to give the world a benediction, don't you think that they could say, come, fellas, here we are, this is what we can do. Now, if they're capable of getting here past the speed of light's remit, uh-huh. if they're able to do these wonderful technological things that are involved in that, surely the ability to communicate with us and get this message that they are harmless would be a very easy thing to do. The fact that they're not doing it, I think, is a component of two things. And that is, somebody here is hiding them, and they themselves have something they don't want us to know about to make the world feel completely insecure. And if that does happen, we have a world constructed on all kinds of systems. Systems might break down, and those systems breaking down might cause chaos. I really, to be honest, don't think that argument holds up. I think we as living beings with this precious entity, mechanism, we have a soul, to us, this is, eternal mechanism. And to actually put that at risk and allow maybe machines to play their games with us, no matter what these machines might have promised, uh-huh. I think is a big, big deal. And we really ought, all of us ought to be able to have a say in this, at least, you know.
No, not the ship.
Can I just...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. It's Andrew here again. You were saying, you know, again, why, if this is the case, why haven't they announced themselves? But as like I say, if a scientist is experimenting with lab rats, does he go and tell them that he's there? If they are trying to make us part of some kind of experiment, some project of theirs for whatever purposes are within their program, there would be no incentive for them to interfere with that by announcing themselves, because they would inherently consider us to be primitive, inferior creatures that are just part of their observation. They don't need to tell us what they're doing or who they are or that they're here.
Well,
even.
Well, that leads to, I guess, to a different question then, to kind of understand how, you know, what they're doing. Are they to the point where they're self-aware, as in, you know, they have their own agenda that they've decided to carry out, or if they are, you know, a manufactured entity,
like Terminator,
you know, have they been set up? Yeah, like they're given one mission, and you know, no matter what happens, they will keep on doing that mission until they're told to stop. Therefore, they will continue to abduct and to carry out these experiments until finally someone says, "End of the mission. Come back."
I think they're after something much bigger. I think they're after the facility we have of life and continuity after life. You know, I don't know whether you know too much about the this paradigm of reincarnation, whatever. Some people say there's a continuity to all of us, and in some kind of way we go on in an eternal scale. I think that these things as machines have discovered this particular phenomenon in us. And they really want to understand how they, too, can, in fact, do this. Now, this all might rest on one important thing, and that is the second law of thermodynamics. And now, this law is commonly called entropy, says that all things, all atomic things in time decay, break up, and get into stances of randomness and chaos, and that will then finally terminate our universe. But suppose we as beings have some way of getting past this, and maybe the great teachers that came, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, came to tell us that we have a facility to continue past the physical into another dominion of being. Uh-huh. And if this is true, and these things are mechanical entities that are trying to get, shall we say, their programmed mind into us through mechanical means, maybe that might interrupt this wonderful course that might be open to all humanity. And I want to understand for myself whether we and that paradigm might be at risk from such an entity. That is basically why I've written the books and why I'm looking at this so strongly over the past 30 or so years.
Wow.
And the more I look at it, you know, I tell you, Jordan, Nick, the more I look at it, the more I'm convinced that each one of us has something very, very strongly to object about. With anyone who might be knowing about this in high levels of government or whatever and keeping and hiding this in some kind of conspiracy, maybe they are controlled, I don't know, by these things. It's possible, that is true. However, don't you think we have to have the chance to take a look at this? And that's really why I've written the books. I want people, ordinary people, to consider the facts. I hope I've presented that as neutrally as possible. And that's basically what this is all about.
All right, well,
Do we get serious about this phenomenon, or do we just discuss this in terms of Star Wars and Terminator and all the rest of it?
Sure. Well, I understand where you're coming from at there. And you mentioned about religious leaders and how they were, you know, helping us to understand the way to continue on. And I know you have some theories and some thoughts on the Shroud of Turin and how you feel that it's relevant to humanity. And I think that would be a good tie-in, you know, going into kind of the religious aspect. You know, we've already been talking about souls, but what relevance does that the Shroud have to everyone?
All the relevance in the world, if I may say so. And the chapter talk about this is Dr. Andrew Silverman, who has come back from Frascati in Italy, where he attended a seminar with all the big minds researching scientifically into this particular phenomenon. And wow. I'll tell you what, mate, we have here a superb affirmation of how special we all are to what they're discovering about this piece of cloth. And I'll hand you over to Andrew now.
Okay. Hello, Andrew.
Hi. I'm not sure how much you know about the Turin Shroud, but basically it's a cloth that has the imprint of a man on it in perfect photographic negative. It's been around for many, many centuries. It was, some people may have heard that there was a carbon dating project which seemed to show it was only about 700 years old, but that's later been shown to have been invalid because they used a bit of the cloth to test that had been sewn in later by the nuns, unfortunately. Now, the fascinating thing about this cloth is that even for those people who think it was made in medieval times, it's not a painting. There's no pigment on there. To make the main body of the image, it's just a surface change in the fibers that holds holographic information, what they call distance coded information, in very high resolution, in very strong anatomical detail that's been studied by pathologists, looking at it in, as I say, in very fine detail, and they've sort of pieced together, various forensic pathologists have done this, what happened to the man who is depicted on there, he went through terrible agonies. He was killed after having been impaled through his wrists and his hands and whipped many times. Mm-hmm. But the thing that is fascinating about the Shroud is that when the scientists who I was with at this conference, when all of them have looked at trying to explain how the image got there, the only explanation that really holds any water is that the image was formed by a short, intense burst of radiant energy, that actually the body that the cloth was wrapping actually shone much, much brighter than the sun, just for a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of a second. And that was enough to form the image. Because of the fact that there's information on the image on the cloth of showing the distance that it was from the man, it shows that the light wasn't an external source, it actually came from his body. So that this dead body that the cloth wrapped actually momentarily shone brighter than the sun. And one very distinguished researcher there, American, Dr. Lavoie, did some research that actually shows that when the image was formed, that the body that was within the cloth, he wasn't horizontal lying on the slab. Mm-hmm. He was actually vertical. He was actually suspended in the air. Now that sounds like a bizarre thing to say, but there's so much historical evidence that shows that equates this man to be the same person as we know as the historical Jesus, who we know there are reports of that he walked on water, that he rose in the air and glowed brighter than the sun, all these things. Now, let me just say right from the outset that this isn't some kind of sermon. It's not nothing religious about it at all. In fact, I come from this from a Jewish perspective, not a Christian one. Just as, in fact, almost all of his followers did at the start, interestingly. I don't think he was trying to make a religion. In fact, to my mind, he very clearly was against religious institutions, and he was always saying that he was just there to bear witness to the truth, not to start hierarchies and institutions. But the fascinating thing about the cloth for me and the image on it is not so much what he was saying about himself, but what he was saying about humanity, because he was a human being. He was capable of doing, he was trying to, I believe, show us that this is what we are all capable of, that actually the atoms of his body were somehow transformed. Perhaps why him? Of all the people who have been through our history, why is he the one that left this unique image? And if we look at his life to try and find out what was unique about him, and look at what he taught and how he lived, it's fascinating if you tie it into one of the paradigms that Nigel talks about in his book, of the fundamental dichotomy between, is everything together all at once, or do we divide? Is everything separate, all apart? And he describes two different ways of being, two different ways of existence. I don't know if you're familiar with this idea of the Big Bang, that the whole physical universe came from nothingness, no thingness, uh-huh. Nothing material. Mm-hmm. It was all like a point all together, and that now everything has separated all apart. And if you look at the things that, like he was describing, that the second law of thermodynamics, everything decays. Well, this is something, of course, that Jesus made many references to. For example, the parable about moths corrupting and rust breaking things down. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, he was trying to encourage people, if they wanted to survive, if they wanted to continue eternally, that not to follow that path of degeneration, of breakdown that matter gives you, but to find the other side of existence, which they have through thought, through caring, through bringing together. And he, like all the great teachers, he taught with the statement that he quoted from the Judaic Torah, saying, love thy neighbor as thyself, which is a very fascinating clue to me, that if we all came from one original source, that we are all one. So your neighbor is yourself. And if we actually realize that, if we actually live according to that, then perhaps we can actually make a fundamental change in our atomic state, in our material status, that actually changes matter into light, just as matter originally came from light at the Big Bang, as scientists are aware, that light is actually, if you like, the interface between the two different ways of being, the separate way that you need things to be separate, and we have material bodies to be separate. And if we are able to coalesce through caring, through not making division, not making prejudice, discrimination, tribalism, nationalism, wars, and all of that, if we're able to see beyond that, then we can undo that separation and become limitless, each person becoming limitless and becoming then identical in the same original source. And that's, for me, what the image on the cloth is a testament to, that actually a human being is capable of undoing that restriction that makes them a separate individual and is able to then transform them into another state.
So are we?
Yeah, well, I'm not a religious chap. I have to come in here, if I may, please. Yeah. I'm not a religious person, though I come from a Christian behest, whilst Andrew comes from a Jewish one. Yet it's very interesting how all these things come together in this incredible piece of cloth. And in fact, this is the whole premise that actually jumped at me when I was doing my research, uh-huh, into the Greys, that there is an actual connection here. Because, you see, if we have this precious facility, as I'm absolutely certain, as Andrew has outlined, that we have, then I can say this much. The Greys, you see, can only exist for life. They are adapting us for a kind of existence heading for the only immortality they can know as machines, you see, a physical immortality that, you know, according to the laws of physics, is no immortality at all, because our universe is going to end one day, as cosmologists all over the world now accept.
Yeah.
It has to end one day with the cold death of the entire universe. If we live for a state of being beyond death, shall we say, Jordan, not the state of being in life, we might find the antidote to anything the Greys bring to bear on us. I believe that this piece of cloth is the most powerful illustration paradigm to demonstrate the power over atoms of someone who lives an existence beyond the atomic state. And I think whatever this individual was trying to do, Jesus Christ, he was in a sense proving, not for us 2,000 years later, although incidentally it seems to have done that, but proving that we have a component to us that is so mighty and so wonderful that perhaps, as Andrew says, we all have to take each one of ourselves much more seriously than we seem to do when we go about the day's own travel, so to speak. And I hope that doesn't sound a kind of like a religious chest.
No, I got
it. Really, it's not intended to be, really.
Here's my question. That light, you know, what was in Jesus that, you know, that caused that to happen? Do you think that the extraterrestrials saw that? And it's kind of a let's see what caused it type of thing. Do you think that's what they're looking for? Because you were talking about
You might be onto something there in the sense that, you know, you remember the temptation exposition in the Bible, in the New Testament, where Christ was supposed to be taken up a mountain and shown all these facilities. One of the things he was shown, we are told, was the cities of the world. Now, you tell me, Jordan, where do you see the cities of the world from one place? You only see it from space. So I think that these guys might have seen something special about this being and took him to a situation where he thought, this guy's different, he's exceptional. Now let's find out what he knows and what he is as a human being. And I think that Jesus was returned by these creatures. You can imagine with a you know, being so superior in technology, they could have squashed him or finished him and whatever, but they did not. They returned him. And I think he was able to tell them, to tell a robot what a robot can never know. Mm. And that is that it is a robot. And he was able to demonstrate to them that they were machines, and as machines they had a value far less than even an insect.
Because
an insect lives. And I think that because they were machines, they didn't take revenge on him. It was information to them. So they returned him and perhaps understood in the context that it was explained that there was a problem for them here as machines, if you see what I mean. And so therefore, they themselves took that on board. And interestingly, who knows, they may still be investigating the extent to which this particular statement of Christ made an impact in their psychology, such as their psychologists can be. So it's a very interesting thing that here was an individual with a special power, shall we say, that had a special point to make to us, or also making the same point to some artifacts from a planet maybe many, many millions of light years away that were on this planet of ours for their own purpose. And that's a very interesting thing. And
let me ask you something we should think about. Now, along with this, you know, your views are so different. What do you say, I guess, in the last couple minutes we have, what's your defense, you know, that we're, you know, other ufologists are kind of just saying, you know, you're crazy. You know,
well,
what do you say to that?
I like that kind of craziness because I think it gives you scope for a great deal of discussion. And if you say someone dismiss someone as crazy, well, that is, I suppose, wisdom is in the moat of the eye of the beholder.
Uh-huh.
I like to be that crazy, shall we say.
Well, you know, and it does make sense in the, you know, if you look at it, you know, a robot really has no, you know, no other end than to break down and decay and be gone, you know, and
right.
humans,
absolutely.
I guess, you know, unless you, you know, believe there is no God, there's no afterlife, and you're very much atheist and think this is it, you know,
yes.
they, you know, they have the hope of moving on, you know, past, you know, the body itself might decay, but the soul, you know, which,
yeah.
you know, what you have the focus on does, you know, have the ability to continue. And
you bet.
That they want to figure, you know, if that's what they're looking for, then yes, yeah. you try to figure out, okay, well, they're able to reproduce, you know, they pass on, you know, how to, you know, try to examine that. And it's very hard, I guess, clinically to examine that,
yes.
you know, to just for some extent. So I can see that part of it, and it would be interesting to get, you know, more into this.
We shouldn't bother too much about people causing us crazy, because one man's crazy is another man's wife.
Exactly.
Dr. Biggestuffle, I'd like to make a point here.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, well, as a crazy scientist, apparently.
Yeah, no, I take no offense to that, but, you know, it's, you know, of course, there's always going to be somebody out there saying someone else is wrong. I mean,
I'm quite proud of it, too.
You know, there you go. Good.
But really what it appears to be from Nigel's thesis, and one thing that really got me interested in all of this, is when he started to say that the greys could actually manipulate us in some way. And that, I think, can be quite dangerous, because, in fact, this genetic manipulation, which they seem to be able to do, and, in fact, even we can do now with ourselves, can actually influence us in various ways. And I was fascinated both by the sort of biochemical and cell biology mechanisms of how that might work, but also when Nigel sort of turned around and said, well, you know, the Shroud of Turin may in fact be a real object, and I certainly think it is, having looked at some of the evidence, that in fact this provides us with an actual pop out of this. Again, from a cell biologist point of view, I go, okay, well, you've got all of this radiant light, et cetera, and you've got this N light, which Nigel speaks about in his book. Well, how does that actually work through cells, and how have we been piggybacked upon? And this is the subject. I've just got interested in this, and in Nigel's next book, I'm going to be putting a thesis together to maybe try and explain some of that. So I think it's an absolutely fascinating thing. It's not all doom and gloom. This book is actually sort of presenting that there is possibly a way out of it for people.
And I know we actually spoke with twice now, Barry Schwartz, and he's a gentleman that went with the, and I can't remember the year, but in the 70s with the group that that did the research on the Shroud, and he shares, you know, with Andrew, you know, being a Jew, looking at the Shroud. And being someone, you know, he is convinced that it's authentic, you know, that it, you know, it's not a painting, it's not a, I mean, you know, down the line of what, you know, other people try to detract it to be, that it is, you know, evidence of something that happened that left that image, you know, and whatever that might be, you know, they've actually detected blood on the Shroud. I mean, it, you know, fascinating speaking with him about it, and then, you know, speaking with you gentlemen, you know, to have another perspective on why
taking it way out, you know, with you know, being at what the aliens are looking for, you know, that's a whole new perspective,
and it adds a little more to, you know, what, you know, what significance it might have.
Sure. The point is that you've got to look at things from a perspective that is not conventional. Conventionality has brought us to the point where our planet might be destroyed.
Yeah, that's a good
We
point.
Really have to look at things with a little bit more of a lateral view. And then something really interesting happens. You might actually get to the truth that way, you know.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, I agree with you on the conventionality thing. It's, you know, if we stick with the, I guess, the status quo of what we think is what, you know, yeah, we're probably, we're so close to the end right now anyways, if going that way. So I know where you're coming from.
It's been very enjoyable talking to you guys, and I'm sure we've given your audience something to think about. And
oh, well, my brain hurts.
They think of us as a bunch of crazies, but I tell you what, we're having a great time being crazy here.
There we go.
Well, you know, and I actually don't think you're crazy at all, so I want to make sure.
Nick's right there with you. I want to let you guys know that we do have your books, Nigel, linked up to our website, whispersradio.com.
Yeah, right. and to your and your website itself is up there linked as well. But both books link. I have those linked up to the Amazon site anyone to purchase it. And I know for sure I'm going to be looking into them because it's an interesting perspective on this.
Thank you very much for your gracious license in hosting us. And let me say, let's hope we meet up sometime in the flesh too. Okay.
Oh yeah, if you're ever.
Anytime you're England way, look me up. Okay.
I'll do that, and the same goes for if you're ever stateside. So.
Thanks very much. It's been wonderful talking to you guys.
You guys have a good night.
Have a good night.
Very much. Good night.
Bye. Well, Miss Quiet Lola, off in your I'm not talking for an hour mode. Let's hear what your brain's saying.
I have never quite heard that theory before about them being robots and things, but when he started talking about the shroud, if you go with a theory that they're robots, and here was this incredible man that could, whether you believe him to be the son of God or not, mm-hmm. this incredible man that was capable of performing quote-unquote miracles. So, of course, they're going to be interested in what made him stand out in all of mankind.
Uh-huh.
And so then, yes, if you take it that he interpreted their visit as a visit from the devil with the temptation. And then, to watch him go through what he went through and then burst into just a column of light is really what he was saying. It makes sense then that they would continue to pursue this all through the years, looking for something or someone who was equal to that, who can perhaps they can tap into to get this secret of what gave him truly immortality.
It gets really deep.
It does, and that's why I didn't say anything. I mean, I've never heard this theory before, so I really didn't feel like I could ask an intelligent question. And I was just kind of really listening to everything that they had to say.
I've heard of the biomechanical, but then he took it a little bit further, past that. And that's what, and that's when I wanted to know because, I'm looking at, I booked them and everything. Yeah, we got to go.
Yeah, all right, we'll talk about it after the break. Yeah, you're listening to Whispers Radio on an AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog. We will be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 710, 85 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, 1-866-514-1600. I'm Jordan Klein. He's Nick Queen. And she is the lovely Lola Miller.
I'm going to have Raleigh back on.
Just
to pump you back up a little bit.
My dear Lola.
My dear Lola.
I've traveled many galaxies.
I know, we got to get that as a drop.
Never seen anything as lovely as you, my dear Lola.
Uh-huh, yeah, except you wanted pictures. Oh, of course, honey, I'll do your sign. Just send me a photo. I'm thinking, yeah.
Send me some, wink, wink, pictures.
You should have sent one of John.
I'm Lola, John.
John in drag.
He would have wore a wig for that.
Oh, I'm sure he would have put pantyhose on him too.
Sammy.
Yeah.
We could have got Sammy. He'd do it.
Uh-huh.
He'd probably come in right now with a wig if we want him to.
Yep.
So Sammy, there's your challenge.
Speaking of a Sammy, we got Sam with us again.
Oh, wait, I didn't have her mic on because she doesn't say
the
hello.
One
Sam.
Time she says hello.
Hi.
She's a little radio shy, so we're not going to make her talk.
Get over
so do you think Albert's listening? Do you want to say anything to Albert?
No, he's not listening.
Yeah, you got a point.
Thanks, Albert. Jeez.
All right, we were talking about the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki, you were saying your brain was numb.
It's a lot to take in because yes, I wasn't sure how. I mean, cause, you know, I'm trying to pull all this stuff together. You know, because I'm when I booked the guest, and this is actually someone that emailed me. You know, wanting to be on the show. You know, and this huge description of the books and the Greys, and I'm like, okay, you know, I've had a bunch of UFO guests on, and then they send the thing about the Shroud of Turin, you know, with the other two guests, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a second, let me go back. What, you know, what did I read last time? And I was like, well, I've got to get them on now just to figure out how these are connecting together, because on the surface, they don't connect together. I mean, you know, it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
But now
yeah.
the way they described it,
it's different.
It makes sense yeah. in an odd sort of way.
I found really fascinating, really. Mm-hmm. I just had never even, well, I had never heard the theory. But I'm not a big, you know, into UFOs or any of that kind of stuff. That's not necessarily,
yeah,
you know, what my big interest is. And so, I've never, you're talking about bio-somethings or somethings, and I have never even heard of that.
Biomechanical entities, yeah.
I'm with you.
What it kind of like you look at the things and it's not the same, but like the Japanese are trying to get. Well, let's take it back to this then. Biomechanical entities, something that both of you can relate to. Battlestar Galactica. Those are those are the Cylons are biomechanical entities, and if you take it to what they're saying, you know they almost are looking at the humans as. It's almost, I don't want to say it's the exact same thing.
Okay, you so see, his,
Jordan's getting it. He's got a smile on his face.
So. Our buddy Nigel, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful English name.
I love Nigel. go ahead.
That's not an original idea, because Battlestar Galactica did it.
Sorta.
And he stole it from them. That's what you're saying, Nick. I got
He didn't.
He's had this idea way before that.
Well, and it doesn't matter, you know.
Exactly.
On Eureka,
mm-hmm.
they have.
Sheriff Andy.
Yes.
I love Sheriff Andy.
I do too. I love that show. I don't know that I like it the way it's going this season. But.
I like it a little. I like it. It's getting better, I think. Mm-hmm. I like that they finally. I like that show because they shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
It's never the status quo with that show.
Yeah.
Except for the only status quo is it's going to get. The town's almost destroyed after every episode.
Yes. And the sheriff is always out of his league and somehow manages to.
Yeah,
fix
and I
things.
Like that. You know.
Yeah. No, but, I like the show. But it's just this season with them being in another time dimension. It's kind of weird.
And they bring in. What's his name from Battlestar? The.
Who cares? It's awesome.
Yeah, the doctor Baltar, he's on the show now. So, Baltar. But
I liked him better on Battlestar.
Yeah, I did too. But you know, it's kind of the same idea because they are looking at the humans as having something that they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they only can reproduce through their the ship that you know.
Yeah.
They can only come back because of the resurrection ship. Where, you know, and they're looking at humans as they're able to pass on, you know, and have that quality of soul.
Well, and that explains a lot.
Yeah.
Because all along, I've always said, if there is a race that is capable of traveling the distances that they would have to travel and doing the things that they are capable of, what do they want with us? We're like lab rats, mm-hmm. like we would look at a lab rat. So
we have Jesus.
So anyway.
You can cut his mic anytime.
I know. I just choose not to bother. But but that gives them then a real purpose
mm-hmm.
for coming, investigating, and sticking around. I mean, I can see him coming once and going, he's things are backwards as all get out, and well, I bother with them. They don't have any. Because really, what do we have to offer?
Well, yeah, you have to look for something exceptional to be able to.
Can't reproduce, our ability to reproduce, and then the ability to
resurrect or continue.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating, you know, and I'm wondering, you know. Because at the end of they were kind of, you know, laughing about, you know, the crazy question. And I think it is a valid question. You know, it is a very different theory than anybody else has presented.
So it's quantum physics at one point.
Exactly. So, you know, how do you defend yourself? And I think they kind of laughed it off a little bit. And I think it's very pertinent. What if they are right? You know, everybody thinks they're right, of course, but, you know, I'll have to think about it some more.
It's going to really be one of those things that keeps me up at night. It won't keep me up at night, but it's something to, you know,
I don't care
it really
that
is something
much.
To ponder. I mean, really, you know,
because
I've always marveled over why would any being be that
interesting?
We
aren't that interesting.
Well, we're not. We're not advanced by those standards. We're certainly not advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And then too, when you talk to people that have been abducted, it's never anybody extraordinary. It's not somebody that is perhaps a rocket scientist or some,
not abducting our leaders.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just have always kind of marveled at why would
there's
you
always
bother?
Has been kind of a religious aspect to, you know, and if you think about it, you know, going back, you know, they always talk about the, you know, abductions in the Bible, you know, at least UFOs in the Bible, and they always point to those, you know, well, you could take this as being a UFO and stuff like that. So, if they have been around that long,
well, the idea of beings from somewhere else has been around even long, long, long before the Bible.
Yeah. Well, and next week we're going to be talking with Jason Martell. He's our guest next week, and he's going to be talking about, and he's one of the people with the Samaria theories and Jordan's favorite. I don't know if he goes into Stargate, but, you know, talking about the technology that, you know, maybe, you know, ancient astronaut kind of theory, you know, that they came and helped set, you know, start us, which is very different from what, you know, Nigel was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that they have been around since then.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and once again,
know.
To what end? If they came and did, in fact, they were the ancient astronauts, what? Are we just like a lab experiment?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we are, I got a feeling they're sitting back and going, well, this one was a bust.
Yeah, but it's like, well, at least a failure is not going backwards. At least we know what to do better next time, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it also, if you go to that theory, it takes away from, it's very opposite from what, Nigel was talking about. Nigel's talking about that we had a definite beginning, and he doesn't mention a god or anything because he's actually
religious. No, it's a big band,
but
big band theory.
You know,
yeah.
Something started us, whatever that is what gave us our quality that, you know, that gives us a soul and all this. And if instead, you know, there's a alien group that comes and settles us and creates us, then at that point we're kind of the biomechanical entity to some degree. You know, we're engineered.
Yeah.
And it's a very opposite theory. So, you know, and it all can hurt your head really badly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes, it can. All right.
All right, I'm going to interrupt you guys here for a second.
Hi.
Always.
Nikki, you want to introduce our guest?
I can do that.
All righty.
Okay. Shift gears here. You had that look in your face like I was like, my God, what is he going to tell us?
Let's talk about the last hour later. Let's talk about the new hour.
Well, Monica Holly, I keep on wanting to say Holly, is an artist, psychic medium, spirit guide, and mother too. Worked in animation, photography, and topography. She's for most of her life kept her psychic and spiritual life secret. Now we're going to talk about her Fringe Dweller on the Night Shift, True Stories from an Afterlife Paramedic. Monica, you with us?
I'm with you.
And I'm trying my best not to say Holly. I don't know. Every time I look at it, I want to say Holly. I don't know why.
No, you know what? That's usually everybody's first inclination because it's kind of scary to see those that word and actually say the word Holly. But it really is. I've had to live with it. It's my real name. I'm sure people out there thought I came up with that one just for the book. But no, unfortunately, I've had it.
See, I've had to deal with the last name Queen and... He's like,
is a drama queen.
Yes. My wife loves the fact that it's Queen. You know, she likes putting her name, especially when they put the last name first. So she's like Queen Lisa, you know, and it's like, yes, I am. You know, so
that wouldn't work in my case. I don't think that would really work in my case.
Here comes Holy Monica.
Well, that, you know, it might work.
I like it.
Now, we've actually, we've said him before the show, and I'm trying to tell Jordan because I haven't got a chance to talk with him all week and, you know, tell him who I've got. And I'm like, okay, you know, like real brief. Okay, she's, you know, afterlife paramedic. And I think one of the responses was, you know, if they're dead, why do they need a paramedic?
That was me.
And they're trying
that
to wrap
me.
Their heads around it. And, you know, and I have to ask, can you explain what an afterlife paramedic is?
So, like, when their heart goes out, you pump them full of drugs, right? Is that...
Okay, the reason I came up with the word paramedic was it started with the term astral triage, which is now we're going backwards a little bit. Basically, I'm not the what you would call the regular psychic, well-known type of psychic or medium out there that people are familiar with, as in you know do a reading for somebody and you see all their deceased or loved ones standing around them. I wish that would be the case, because that direct sort of communication would really work a lot better for me, but I'm a lucid dream medium. Okay. So that means I get to play in the sandbox of the other side. Okay. Mm. Now there's two stages of crossing over. There's crossing over from life to death, but there's been a limbo state before they cross over into the light. Now the reason I came up with the concept of astral triage is when I was trying to describe to people what it is exactly that I do.
Okay.
Now everybody's watched TV. What does everybody do? They channel surf, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Now how many times have you actually ever watched a movie from beginning to end? Chances are you reach a channel, you're in the middle of a movie, and you just immerse yourself right in it. That's very much what it's like for me. When I go to sleep at night, I'm like a giant radio tuner. And for some reason, I guess it's my lot in life, or the afterlife, to attract lost or distressed souls. So I lay myself to sleep. I go to dreamland. I start lucid dreaming, and I connect with these lost or distressed souls. Now, what that may look like is we all have states of emotion. When we're joyous, it's yippee-skippy. We've just won the lottery, whatever. It's great. But when we're under distress or duress or, God forbid, a trauma, a tragic situation where it's a life and death situation, your amp meter just goes right off the scale with stress, your adrenaline, everything. And for some reason, I seem to tune in on that frequency. So I end up dropping in the middle of a scene as if I was dropped in the middle of a movie. And when something's going on, it's like triage. It's like a paramedic being dropped on a battlefield where he's looking around and he doesn't have time to assess the how, the who, the where, the why, the what. He literally just tends to immediately the first person triage, the priority, who needs help first, work on that, then the next. Now, the afterlife idea of a paramedic, it comes in a variety of stages. I mean, there's some cases where I'm in my dreaming body, but I'm able to help somebody in the waking reality who's walking around not sleeping, as in the waking reality. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of that or if you're familiar with that.
No, I can't say I've heard of that before. I'm trying to think if I have, and I'm going through. It's like, I may have, but probably not. Can you explain for those that haven't, though?
Sure. I mean, it is something to wrap your head around. It's a little bit out of the ordinary, perhaps, except for others who have experienced it. And by no means do I think I'm the only one that does this. Basically, if I'm dreaming and I'm in my ethereal body, it means I can astral travel just about everywhere. So, for example, a situation that actually occurred was I found myself in a dark parking lot where a woman was trying to, at night, get to her car. Being ethereal, I can see the full range of perspective of everything that's going on. Now, I'm in my dreaming body. I don't even know if she can see me necessarily, other than I'm in my dreaming body. Mm-hmm. I see a guy who's stalking and waiting to jump her. Well, my instinct, as any person, you know, would usually do, is warn that woman. So I start trying to shout in her ear behind her, turn around. I'm trying to get her attention to turn around so she sees the fellow who's about to stalk her and hopefully make a bolt for it and get away. Now, to no avail, and I'm literally shouting in her ear, because when I'm in my dreaming body, even though technically, as in the Matrix, as Neil, you know, learns in the movie, you can do anything, there's a part of you that comes along for the backseat driver, which is the logical mind, and it can either be a hindrance or it can be a bonus. So I started trying to think logically and shout and shout and shout in her ear until I literally was screaming with emotion, very much like in the movie Ghost, when that fellow in the subway tells Patrick Swayze, you've got to bottle it up and just let it out. Very same kind of thing. Huh. So I managed to shout loud enough where she doesn't necessarily know why she turned around. She turns around, she sees the fellow, she makes a break for it, and she makes it to safety. Now, how many times in our waking reality have we found ourselves turning around at just the right moment when we needed it and we don't know why? I think we've all experienced that at some point.
Yes, yes.
And that could be lauded to tuition, whatever. Who knows? My experience was that in that case, I was able to make a difference in the waking reality, even though I was only in my dreaming body.
Now, before we go into, you know, the logistics of all this and everything, that would seem like you could never get a good night's sleep. I mean, if you're, you know, you every time you go to sleep, you're lucid dream. Because, you know, I can think of a couple of times where, you know, and even here lately, it seems like, you know, it's almost like the dream is this extremely real. And that's why I'm thinking of as a lucid dream. You wake up in the morning, you're like, man, I got to get some sleep, you know. I mean, because it was so intense that you're
worn out.
Yeah, you're worn out from it, you know. And it's,
oh, yeah.
If you're doing this, now, does this happen every night?
Yes, it does.
Okay, and so you must be exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how do you know, and I hate, I don't want to be like, Monica, you're full of crap. I want to say, how do you know that you're just not dreaming?
Okay.
Like, because I've had some pretty crazy ones. Like, oh, I remember I was like this English guy and I had to kill somebody with safety scissors. Like,
oh, God. 007.
I had like one of them little
bowler
hats
on. No, don't give him any illusions, please.
But I mean, that was realistic to me. I mean, it was hard work. But okay. I mean, how do you know it's different?
First of all, I've been doing this, or I've had the experience of it since I was a child.
Uh-huh.
So having done it that often, at least 10 times a night, that many years, I now know the difference as if you would know the difference between chocolate and vanilla ice cream. You just...
Is that a fat joke?
No, it's not. I know it's not. I'm a foodie. It's always related to food. It's all about the food. As for the sleep thing, here's the thing. When I was growing up, from grade school to high school, my experiences just kept compounding. They just kept every night more and more and more. And I'll tell you, a lot of people don't realize this who knew me in high school. I literally would fall asleep in my classes. I looked gaunt. I was frazzled. I was hypervigilant beyond belief. I swear a lot of the teachers probably thought I was strung out on something. I was not, just lack of sleep. What ended up happening was I had what I would like to call it a breakthrough, but I did have what other people would term a nervous breakdown in my 30s. And what I did was I went to a counselor. I found a mentor who actually said to me, Monica, did you know that there's a choice when you go to sleep? You can ask for all the rest that you need, and if you ask for it, you will get it. I just looked at her dumbfounded, like, there's a choice? I had no idea there was a choice.
I had no idea either. We need to talk. I mean,
now,
okay,
how
do you
do
that?
Right away? Is this Jordan or is this Nick?
This is Nick. I'm sorry.
Okay, Nick, this is what you do. I swear it works. It worked for me. You go to bed at night and you tell yourself, I will get all the rest that I need. Okay? Mm-hmm. What happened that very night, Nick, no lie. All right? I'm in school because there's school on the other side. That's a whole other ball.
We'll come back to that in a second. I'll put a note on that.
So I'm there and I'm studying. I have my briefcase. Like you say, it's all very real. And I'm ushered into another room. And this room is a room in between the school and a room in between the other side as to where I would normally be acting as this afterlife paramedic. And I have like this ethereal, what I call ethereal guardian caregiver, almost like a bodyguard, and says to me, lay down on this bed and get some rest. So I'm laying there on this bed getting some rest, thinking in my dream, aware of my dream, thinking, where is this going? This is really unusual. And then the door on the other side of the room, there's a knock. And my ethereal bodyguard goes over, opens it, and there's another ethereal spirit on the other side saying, where is she? We need her. Where the heck is she? come on, let's go. And my ethereal bodyguard said, no, she needs her rest right now. And you're going to have to find somebody else. Thank you. And the other ethereal spirit is just, oh, no, we really. And my bodyguard was even bigger and more adamant and said, no,
which is always
she
good.
Needs her rest now. And when she gets her rest, then she'll be out again. And that's when it clicked in my head. Oh, my gosh, I am looked after. And you may not have that kind of a dream, Nick, but I swear if you tell yourself that you will get all the rest that you need, you will, and you will wake up not necessarily as exhausted.
Well, I will try that tonight, and I'll let everybody know how it works next week. I'll try it for the next week.
Good coffee is good, too.
Coffee is good?
Coffee is good.
See, that's kind of the reverse.
Yeah,
effect,
I was
going to
say. Well,
Monica,
that's if you
morning,
can't get to sleep.
Going.
I've been trying to become a coffee person. It just isn't happening yet. Now, to get back to... Okay, let me try to wrap my mind around... Okay, so you go to sleep... And would you say that there's on the, let's call it, you know, the dreamland kind of idea, that there's, you have a briefcase, there's school, you have a bodyguard. Is this stuff that your mind, and I don't mean this to be mean, but, you know, is that you're creating, or do you feel like you're just going from one side to the other where that's all exists that anybody can reach? Does that make sense?
It does. I think it's a co-creation so that the person who's having the experiences is in a position to be able to understand the message. And
that's how your mind creates it to the point where you can understand. You understand school. Yeah. You understand a bodyguard. Yeah. And that's how you're understanding or, you know, you're, I guess, coping with it.
Exactly. Have you ever seen the TV show Medium?
I haven't, but Lola, I think you knew it.
Okay, you know how the character Alison Dubois, she goes to sleep and she will get a very cryptic dream that for the observer watching it goes, what the heck is going on? There's a lot of puzzles. There's a lot of things that don't make sense. And inserted in her dreams are her family members or things or people that she knows, but not in a context that she can discern what's going on, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, in the TV show, it takes her, obviously, for the full hour, let's face it, it is TV, for things to work themselves out. But that's very much how it works for me. Now, I'm a comic book geek. I grew up with comics. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I like you.
My spider's sense tingles all the time, I tell you. And anyway, I get a lot of things with movie references, characters. For example, if I, not that I do, I'm just saying, I'm giving an example here. If I were to dream of George Clooney in a situation going on, I wouldn't think, oh, it's George Clooney. No, Monica, would make the association that, oh, it's a doctor. It's a position of a doctor.
As long as it's not Batman.
Batman needs my help. The worst Batman needs my help. Oh, sorry, George.
Not the Dark Knight. No. But that's how it works for me. And over the years, I've come to recognize what certain elements mean. I mean, for the longest time, I knew I was having experiences. And I knew I had spirit guides trying their best to tell me something. And I was just, you know, thick and daft not to really get it. So I finally put my foot down. I was trying to discern what really is my, you know, spirit guide. And so I put my foot down and I said, okay, if you're going to show up in my dreams, you better show up in a way that I'm going to recognize you. And I'll know that it's a spirit guide, and I'll know that you're trying to tell me something. Very next night, boom, they show up in a black T-shirt and black pants every single time. Now I know.
Yeah.
And I've had sometimes when somebody will show up in a gray T-shirt. That's a newbie. And I have actually had one angel show up. That was an incredible experience. Black pants, white shirt, black vest.
Oh, so you watched Saving Grace, huh?
No, actually, I haven't.
Oh, that's about an angel, that Earl, and he wore flannel shirts and rock concert T-shirts.
Oh,
and
nice.
Yeah, he was cool.
As long as it wasn't Michael from the John Travolta movie.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason now my angels, I always have the sense of the Nicolas Cage and, you know, the black.
Oh, that was a very intriguing movie.
It was an intriguing movie. It was a very interesting.
Oh, I liked some of that.
Yeah. So, see, now you're in the right place. I don't know if you've ever heard of the show before. We tend to go into movie pop culture probably too much.
Oh,
yeah.
Perfect.
So,
it's the only references I have for
people's personalities. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's we all love that, you know, pop culture. You know, I love science fiction. I'm a big comic book geek as well. Jordan actually has a Green Lantern watch.
Oh, nice.
So you know, and I'm a big Superman
fan. I'm rocking the nerd garb.
We've even had Neil Adams on the show, if you know who that is.
Yes, I do.
he was an interesting conversation. So.
All right, I got to ask, because I don't know if I missed that part or not, if you said it already. Now, when you go into your dreams,
mm-hmm.
okay, now I'm going to walk you through what my brain's telling me, and then you correct me, okay?
Okay.
Okay, you pop up in your dream world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are we helping souls pass on, or are you turning into like the guardian angel to where you're helping people who are alive in situations? Like, was a woman really about to get mugged by somebody around the corner, and you were the guardian angel, so to speak, telling them, hey, get out, watch, you know, blah, blah, blah? Or were you somebody helping somebody pass on?
Or both, for that matter.
Both, okay, actually. Both. You know, the term guardian angel, since speaking with people's perceptions of the names that they give to things can be a very personal thing. So I don't like to throw terms around. I mean, to somebody, guardian angel is a very sacred thing, and I get that, and I understand that. I would probably make a generalization as in caregiver or just simply guardian. I'll give you an example of one that was validated.
Guardian of the universe. Holy mother.
You know what? Guardian of the human community. We are all each other's guardians. I mean, if you think that the potential is there for all of us to go to sleep at night, whether you remember this or not, and be there for somebody else. You don't know when you're walking down the street, how do you know that somebody that, you know, you see in a window reflection or on the street actually didn't help you out at some point? We just don't know, and that's the spooky nature. But I'll give you a validation. I had what's called a do-over. I've been doing this since I was a kid, so some of them are very comic booky terms, okay? You just got to go with it. So a do-over is when I have a dream and it repeats itself. So for example, I'm in the car with a fellow who's driving. I'm in the passenger side, and I can see that he, for some reason, is not paying attention, and he's about to hit a woman and a child on a curbside who have just stepped off the curb intending to go into the street.
Uh-huh.
I'm screaming like anybody would probably do, which is no, very loudly, going, like thinking this is not happening. It happens. And my state of emotional distress was so much that it literally did a rewind on the video machine. So literally it just rewinds and we start again. And I'm looking, and this was the first time I ever had a do-over where it was like, oh my God, there's a second chance. And we're going again, and I scream loudly, no. So I wake up thinking, what the heck was all that about? First of all, it repeated, but I don't know the outcome. Very next day in the paper, I read about a woman with her child, and the woman states that she was about to step off the curb, and something, she has no idea what, pulled her back, and a car that went out of control that normally would have hit her and her child instead went off and hit a lamppost, you know, off to the side. That was spooky.
Wow.
That was one of my first validations where I realized, oh my gosh, that really happened. And I'll tell you, two things happen when somebody has a very spooky experience. Number one, they're either, oh, that didn't really happen. There is no way in heck, you know, based on everything that I know, that that possibly could happen. On the other hand, if you realize, oh my gosh, that really happened, you either think I'm crazy, or you realize, oh, now I have something new to face, because now I've just had an experience that contradicts what I previously thought as real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the conundrum can start.
Wow.
Now, I have to ask this, because it also, the other side of this is that when this started, it had to be, first, very scary for, you know, how old were you when this started?
I remember my first dreams when I couldn't even walk yet.
Wow.
And I remember every night, now here I am, not even a toddler. Well, I say toddler just for the age reference, but I mean, I don't even remember walking at the time. So if you can imagine, you know, being in a family and you go to sleep at night and you, okay, I'm giving my age away here. It's the 60s, okay? There's very little exposure to television, media, and that sort of thing compared to today's generation. I go to bed at night, and I wake up in my dream in the jungle, but I'm not me. I am me, but I'm in the body of a young boy, say about 16 or 17 years old, and I get the feelings that I am somewhere where I was too young to be. I shouldn't have been there. After the fact, years later, I now know what that was. So I'll impart with you what I've learned. I'm in the jungle. I'm in a troop. I'm in a war, what looks like the Korean War. And what happened was is I'm with my troop, and we are so exhausted, we stop and we take a break. And I've got my boots on, and all I can think of is to take my boots off and take a break. So I take my boots off, and my feet are swollen, they're bleeding, they're calloused, we're all thirsty, when all of a sudden, all of us were surrounded by Asian fellows in a specific type of uniform with bayonets, which I later, like I said, discovered to be Korean. And the language barrier, of course, I don't have a clue of what they're saying, but instinctively we all raise our hands, and it's obvious that they want us to go with them somewhere. And I remember just pointing to my boots, basically saying, I'll come with you, can I please just put my boots on so that I can walk, you know, without being barefoot. I thought that the fellow pointing the bayonet at me got what I was saying or gesturing, but obviously he didn't, because as soon as I reached for my boots, literally it slowed down into slow motion where he started firing, and every single bullet I could see in slow motion, and I could feel the impact in my body, and the last one penetrated my skull, and that's when everything went black. So here I am as a toddler having this dream every single night, and it went on for years until it started dissipating, where then it was once a week, and then once a month, and then maybe once a year. Now, from my understanding, that is definitely a past life memory. And apparently a lot of children that are young and don't have the conditional behavioral conditioning set in yet, who have dreams, actually dream of their previous life, but they don't necessarily speak about it, and they don't necessarily think anything of it. And certainly parents don't necessarily have the inkling or the knowledge of you know, how to cope with that if their child brings it up. But it is quite prevalent, whether people realize it or not. But that was my experience. That was my first one.
Oh, wow. My God.
Yeah.
Wow, no, I just got goosebumps all over. That's amazing.
Very emotional, too.
I can imagine. Well, did you happen to watch? It was a very short-lived program. It was on Fox. I don't know what it would be up in Canada, but it's called Past Life.
No.
Oh,
no,
it was just on this past, I think it was the spring season.
Oh, yeah?
And it was about a foundation.
Well,
it was about a foundation. And what they did when people started having, well, like that dream. And when all else failed, and they would run a whole battery of tests, either physical and psychological, to make sure that it wasn't something else.
Right.
When everything else failed, that's when they would start looking for connections with a past life.
Mm.
And I just thought it was the greatest show. Of course, it didn't make it because it was more like a thinking people's show, and you know, those never.
We can't have those on TV.
No, when they say it's critically acclaimed, I know. Don't get involved, because it's going to be gone in 3 weeks, you know.
Joan of Arcadia.
Yes.
Perfect example.
Absolutely.
Love that show.
I did too. It's still on something.
Yeah.
I think on Sci-Fi maybe, or
Deja Vu actually a lot of times will,
Or
Diva. There are some great shows out there that just brought about new concepts and, you know.
The Bachelor.
God, Jordan.
That's the opposite
example. See
what I
have to deal with every week? Every week.
Brainless stuff that keeps going. I know where you guys are coming from.
Now, have you ever jumped into the body of an animal?
Yes, I have. And I really don't recommend it. Okay. Astral triage.
I'll keep that in mind.
Astral triage. I was trying to get the attention of a woman, and she was in the basement, and she was locked in. Long story, she couldn't get out, and I was trying to actually bring her attention to the fact that if she broke this window or whatever and climbed up, she could get out. could not get her attention. And now, don't even ask me
what
why.
What animal were you in?
Well, don't ask me why I couldn't go in the room, but I saw a cat go by the window.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else had worked, and I did so without thinking, and this can either go for you or get you in trouble. It got me in trouble. Jumped into the cat. Oh, my gosh. I right away realized that the packaging was all wrong. So foreign to me.
That's because cats are evil.
Are not.
In my mind, initially, it was like I squealed in my mind. Well, the cat squealed too, but the cat squealing actually got the woman's attention, and she actually was able to follow through, and you know, she got out and got to safety and whatnot. But I realized then, I mean, I got out as soon as I got in because the packaging just seemed completely wrong, and I don't recommend it, but it did work. So
I would have suggested to get her out of the window, you know, get her through the window and moving would have been a bear.
Oh.
Well, no, she's not going to go out the window if there's a bear out there.
You rip the window out.
Good point.
That's why you're not a fringe dweller.
Yeah. You got to think
like
out
Sam
of the
said, there wasn't even a bear there.
That's right.
There was a cat,
work
Nick.
I work with what I'm given, okay? It's Apollo 13 all the way. You work with the all right?
She's not a wonder twin. So she can't create...
Form of gopher. Okay. Well, so you actually are now. You normally enter into, you know, let's go back to the main beginning. You have the woman and you have the guy coming after her.
Yeah.
Why couldn't you have just jumped into the woman's body, you know, or jumped into the guy's body and just walked the other way? I mean, what stopped you from doing that? I mean, it's
because I didn't learn how to do that yet.
Oh, okay.
But you can
That's
do that
later.
Now.
Later.
Well, when did the first dream happen then? I mean,
okay, I call that a jump in. Okay.
Okay.
See,
kinda like
again,
Quantum Leap.
The comic book references, right?
Well,
it's got to be short. It's got to fit into those little bubbles.
Well, and I was thinking Quantum Leap before this all started because of the, you know, the jumping into the animal. I was like, this Quantum Leap, you know, is there a Sam with you? You know.
Yeah, he wears all black. Didn't she already said that?
Oh, okay.
There's just not a Ziggy.
See, I'm not that familiar with the show, but I've heard of it since then, and I thought, yeah, that actually is really
You would like to like it. I would recommend
give you some
it.
Tips.
Yeah, maybe, you know.
Hey, listen, you know, art imitates life, imitates art. It happens mm-hmm. all the time. You know, and necessity is the mother of invention, and that's where, again, that whole Apollo 13 thing comes in, because here I was in one scenario where this is actually really... It was a horrendous experience, and I'll try and put it into a decent perspective so that it's not all about the shock and the sensationalism. But there was a fellow, a homeless person, who was really, really on his last breath of life, and he was a drug addict. And when I say all these things, too, I do so without judgment. I'm just relaying facts here. I'm not placing judgment on anything. His situation was he was a drug addict, and his dealer, for whatever reason, had got it into his head that he was going to pour gasoline all over him and light a match and literally roll him right down into the river.
Jeez.
And sorry?
I went, geez.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, I could, as an observer, I could see this going on, and I literally tried to do everything I could to get this poor fellow, you know, out of harm's way, but he didn't even have the enough energy for himself. And here's the thing about necessity in a situation as an afterlife paramedic. It's in your mind what your intention is that you want to do. And it's just like in that movie Ghost, when Patrick Swayze, he wells it all up to unleash it. It's the intention in your heart that goes a long way. And all I could think of was just getting this guy and rolling him out of harm's way. The next thing you know, I didn't even realize how I'd done it at the time, because I never did get the manual, by the way, to do how to do any of this. And I ended up inside his body, and I realized I was inside him. So instinctively, logical brain, start rolling. Me as Monica thinking, I'm going to roll down, you know, the embankment. I did so inside his body, and we're in the water. And suddenly I've jumped out of his body, and I'm actually holding him up in the water so that he doesn't drown, because this fellow doesn't even have the energy to keep himself afloat. So now I'm holding him afloat, And I'm trying to drift him away as far away as possible from this drug dealer who's very pissed off that, you know, this guy's managed to get away for whatever, you know, reason he didn't keep up with him and is still trying to, you know, go after him. But I managed to drift this fellow away. And I'll tell you something very, very enlightening that happened in the same dream. Not only did I do what I call a jump in, but what happened was is he drifted off and I realized he was literally passing away in my arms. And that was a really tough thing to hold somebody when they're passing from life to death, because in a lot of cases, I'm actually privy to their life review, so to speak. You know how everybody talks about, I saw my life flash before my eyes. Yeah. Well, you can actually experience that, and I've done it with them, and it's like the intensity of a lifetime of living on the head of a pin, and that is just so emotionally just out there. It's just so overwhelming. Well, this fellow passed away, and up until that night of dreaming, I had wondered, and in a little bit of an anger state of frustration of, is what I'm doing every night, showing up in these people's scenarios, is it making a difference? Do they actually make it to the light? Because once they disappear, I don't know what becomes of them. And I was getting really frustrated and questioning, what does all this mean and what is it for? Well, I finally gave up on that, and I actually just let it go. And I just faced the fact that, you know what, it is what it is. I'm there to do my best. And that's all I can do. Well, that's the night I had this dream with this drug addict. And what happened was, as soon as he passed from life to death, like in any dream, things change. And all of a sudden, it's daylight. It's gorgeous. The sun is shining. The water is crystal clear blue. And I'm on the side of this water that's just pristine. And I can see this former drug addict swimming in the water. But he's no longer gaunt. He's no longer on his last breath. He is in absolute vitality of life. And I recognize him, and I'm thinking, what is this? And he waves me to come over. There's no spoken words. A lot of it is almost telepathic in your mind. It's just you get the gist of what's transpiring, you know, for communication without spoken words. Mm-hmm. And I go over to him, and he gives me a hug. And I'll tell you, the hug that I got from him was so filled with unconditional love, gratitude, thanks, everything. It's rare that I feel a hug to that intensity. And my question in my head was, what was that for? And he said, you needed this right now. And I got it that it was the validation that he actually made it to the light. He made it to the other side. And he was just giving me that validation that what you do does make a difference. Because check it out. I'm here and I'm good. And it's all good. And that was an incredible, incredible experience, because not only with the idea of the jump in, but also the validation that I had actually made a difference. It was huge, really wow. Huge and emotional.
Now, do you ever, you know, and I hate to ask this because, you know, it's, you know, it seems a little negative, but do you ever not succeed in?
Oh, in, yeah.
And, you know, is that hard to deal with? Or have you gotten to the point where you can kind of, you understand you're not always going to save everybody?
But it's tough. I have three instances. One is where I find myself on the top of a mountain, and there's a mountain climber. And not unlike Cliffhanger, that opening scene, Stallone's daughter by the hand, same thing. And I've got this fellow by the hand, and I know I'm in my ethereal body, but I know for whatever circumstance, this fellow can see me because I've got eye contact. And as he slips away, having and retaining that eye contact, when I saw that movie Cliffhanger, I was like, oh my God, I so get that. And it is horrendous. The only consoling thought in that scenario is that even though that fellow perished, where I don't know his name, you know, whoever he was, he didn't pass alone. He didn't die alone. And I know this, that I'm not the only one. So if it's something that's consoling to people out there who have loved ones that are out on their own somewhere, you know, whether it's on a mountain or in the interior or somewhere, God forbid, you know, something, you know, horrific happens, that from my experience, there is somebody there with them, whether it's another loved one, another fringe dweller. I've heard people writing in now, they call it dream walking or dream walker, which is a beautiful term. I'm not the only one, and it is out there. I had another experience where a car goes off the embankment into the water, and there's a little boy in a car. Car's filling up with water. And we've seen this played out in movies so many times. Mm-hmm. We really have. And this was a real learning lesson for me, because here I am on the outside of the car. I'm in my ethereal body. Well, as in Neil in the Matrix, supposedly anything's possible, then why wasn't I able to get into the car to help this boy? Don't know. I literally couldn't get past the door, trying to open it. This poor little boy's hands on the glass, it's filling up with water. The only thing I could do was put my hands on the outside of the glass, on his, keep the eye contact, and I swore to myself I would not lose this child's gaze, and I kept eye contact, and it was the only thing I could do as he passed away. And I was so frustrated and so angry and felt so helpless waking up again, thinking, what is the point of having, you know, these gifts if I can't help some of these people?
Yeah.
And I felt that the answer was sometimes it was just to simply be the observer and to be there for somebody so that they did not pass alone, which I'll tell you is not an easy thing to take on.
Yeah.
And the reason for my nervous breakdown was because of all the emotional stress that I was going through. But thank God to my mentor and Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, and, you know, Eckhart Tolle and Stuart Wilde, all valuable books for anybody who's dealing with any sort of internal emotional stress, whether it's of a paranormal nature or not. If you have the coping mechanisms, the coping skills, you've got tools for the toolbox where you can really get through some what you might think are insurmountable odds, and I highly recommend them.
Like you said, use what you got.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Monica, I hate doing this. This has been a fun hour.
Oh, my gosh. I want to have you back on as soon as we can, because
I would love to come back. You guys are great. And what is your name, by the way? You've got a third party there.
Oh, Lola.
Lola.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure, Lola. And you seem to be outnumbered.
and what Lola wants, Lola gets. We will have you back on.
Not necessarily, but that's a good thing.
any comic book fan we have to have back.
Yeah.
So.
We do have your book linked up to our website, whispersradio.com.
And your website.
And your website as well. That way our listeners, if they want to get to know you more,
people to write into the, I have a page called Ask the Fringe Dweller, and truly my purpose in, you know, getting this book out there, it started with getting my artwork out there, getting the paintings of my dream images out there. I encourage other people to embrace their inner freakdom, make it their dance partner, and if they have anything to share, write it into Ask the Fringe Dweller, because the more we share our experiences, the more we take the fear out of these incidents, and perhaps, you know, lessen the isolation that a lot of people out there are feeling with their experiences. I'm currently catching up with hundreds of emails that just came in the last 2 weeks, and I plan to put them in a special page on the website. It's a lot of work, and there are some wonderful heartfelt stories that, honestly, if people were to read them, I encourage people, talk to your family, talk to your friends, don't keep it in the closet, come out of the psychic closet. We're in a different era now, and there's a lot of comfort out there for anybody who feels isolated in these experiences.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Monica. You'll be hearing from us again.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Right,
I've had a great time.
You have a good day.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fun.
Well, I told you. Did I tell you you'd love her?
Yes, you did.
So it's an
awesome responsibility. And the one thing I wanted to ask her, and yet, you know, I don't. It's got to be a curse in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Even once now that she has learned to deal with it, I can't even. That's one thing that I'm glad I don't have any kind of psychic abilities.
You want the encounter, but you don't want the
responsibility. Put it in the comic book, because she said she loves comic books. You know, Superman has this, you know, Superman, he's got all these abilities that makes him, you know, invulnerable, flight, speed, strength, and all this. But, you know, the curse is that you you can't save everybody, you know. And
yeah.
And you know, a lot of people, you know, oh, it's cool, you know, he's above the earth and everything, and he's hearing all these people that are saying, you know, help me, help me, help. You know, you have to pick.
Yeah.
Which one?
Who do you?
Who do you save? And who, you know, are you saving the right person? And it's the same thing as, you know, I couldn't imagine being outside of the car trying to get in, you know, and.
You know what it reminded me of?
What's that?
Charlie.
Charlie.
And Lost.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the hand.
It's not Penny's boat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, actually, I thought she was going to say it was Susan Smith's children.
Ugh. Yeah.
I don't know why that's been on my mind. Bill brought it up a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I thought about that
not
long ago either. I mean, that was tragic, tragic.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's been so long ago, too. That was like, what, 98?
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a
long
time.
She's eligible for parole or
that
something.
That might be why I was thinking.
And she shouldn't get it. No. Remember, everybody who's listening that listens in the morning to the broadcast, you might want to call in and ask Lola how it feels not smoking.
Now, wait a second.
Now,
don't go putting
all kinds of pressure on me for this, because this is a whole lot different than you going to a chiropractor.
Now, you just got to lay there.
Don't hold back.
And not cry.
She's backing out on me, everybody. Hear that?
You'll cry.
I'll
cry like a baby.
I know you will.
I mean, you know, she said she would try. I mean, that's a hard thing to do.
Thank you,
okay.
Nick.
Okay, well, everybody call in the morning and encourage her.
There you go. That's a little better than... mock her and tell her,
I'm
you know.
I'm going to pound you.
And
next
bring,
week we'll have a new host.
And yes.
Bring
and
her chewing
Lola
gum.
Will be here.
And
so will I.
Wait, who's that?
One guess as to what.
Yeah.
Sam, you're looking for I mean, you've been kind of quiet, but I think you've learned a little bit today. We need a new host next week.
Everybody, August 6th, if you're able, really, really asking to come out to the Capitol Music Hall or Capitol Theater, downtown Wheeling. It is at 7 o'clock, my band's CD release party, West Finley. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com.
Well, and how awesome is that, that stage?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so
excited.
You
know, I mean,
have you guys even got the practice on it yet?
On the stage? No, it's like another 3,000 just to practice on the stage. So.
Wow. Well,
yeah. So we're practicing on our stage.
Good luck.
But it's going to be a heck of a show. We're really trying to. Sure. I mean, we've pumped a lot of money to try to make it entertaining. So really want people to show up and have fun.
Don't bring up the money.
Oh, it's
going
to be so awesome.
Because
it's not just going to be a band playing. We have a lot of stuff that's going to be going on. That's why I say, you know, we pumped money into it. It's going to be awesome. No.
There's whispering here, and I have no idea what's happening.
If you want to hear the EVP, you know, record the show.
Yeah.
You want to
Let's
hear what
play
Lola
it back
said.
Now.
I heard a woman saying,
"No, you
go
didn't.
Go away.
I'm sorry.
Hey, we're out of time.
We sure are.
We're pretty past. Okay, everybody, we love you. Until next week, don't be afraid. Only believe.